What is dedication?
The thing that drives me every day as a dad is Dariano. We call him Day-Day for short. Every day he's hungry for something, whether it's attention, affection, knowledge. And there's this huge responsibility in making sure that when he's no longer under my wing, that he's a good person. I want him to be able to sit back one day and go, we worked together, we did a good job.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Coverage varies by plan. View contracts and exclusions at endurancewarranty.com.
If you're driving a car or truck with an expired warranty and suddenly lost your transmission or needed a full engine repair, would a $4,000 repair bill leave you stranded? I'm Danica Patrick. Don't get caught off guard with a vehicle breakdown. Choose the company I trust, Endurance. No matter the mileage, if your vehicle is less than 20 years old, Endurance offers comprehensive auto protection plans for any budget. Protection on the drivetrain, electrical, transmission, AC, and more. Plus, benefits like 24/7 roadside assistance and rental car reimbursement on any plan. Endurance handles everything from making the claim through the repair process to paying the certified mechanic of your choice. Don't get caught off guard with a vehicle breakdown. Act now and get one full year of elite benefits, a $2,000 value, free.
Visit endurancewarranty.com for your fast free quote today. That's endurancewarranty.com.
David, is this a hot take to say of The Hobbit and Lord of the Rings trilogy, The Hobbit's my favorite book of the four?
It would be mine as well. I think Return of the King
slots
in right behind for me. But I'm with you there. But I think
the ending took the score for me from a great to really great book to I was absolutely floored.
Anything else you want to say, Gecko, to these people and implore them to read this book?
It's under 300 pages.
That's it.
Personally, I think that the first Hobbit movie is a slammer of cinema.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the To Ramble episode. I'm one of your hosts, Austin.
I'm your other host, Richard.
The top 10 standalone fantasy books of all time. Not according to us. We might have to do that separately.
Basically, take this list with a grain of salt because I did not make it.
You actually don't know the complete list right now. You know a couple of them because it slipped through the cracks. However, you don't have the list. I polled the audience behind your back. I posted it on all of our social media, but you don't look there.
No.
And so
infrequently to say the most about that. So
and polling the audience, we let them all vote on which was the best fantasy book, standalone fantasy book of all time. And there were we hit 95 different standalone fantasy books were voted upon because people just pitched out there. The top winner had 45 votes, which we'll get to because there were the 350 or so respondents for the sample size of people who saw this. And we're going to give, before we even get to the top 10 of what everybody here voted for, we have some honorable mentions to get to, and then go through the best. And the point of this is if everybody's watching this video, we're going to have people, along with Rich and I, pitch each of these books to see if people out there want to read these. Because although we polled all of our audience, we let our patrons, who some are here right now, we let our patrons submit either a document, written document, a video, or come here live to pitch the book and get people to read these fantasy standalones. So the
Before the list, thing to listen for here is officially this list does not have the Rambler approved seal. I have not given it yet. That is to be determined. So we'll find out at the end of this video if it is an approved list or if it's sacrilege.
The very first one, this is honorable mentions. We have four of them we'll go through.
Okay.
This one, you'll get your approval. We have Salty here live to pitch this one. It is none other than The Lions of El Rassan, which we both...
The fact that this isn't in the official list, we're already off to a bad start.
Yeah,
the fact that it's only honorable mention, we're not starting off at a great place.
It made it top 14. Yeah. It did not get top 10.
All right, all right.
Salty?
How's it going, guys?
How's it going?
First of all, the fact that it made it top 14 is a real shame. And I think Guy Gabriel Kay is extremely underrated. I read him for the first time. I never even heard of him until like last year. And he's incredible. I mean, he really is. He's incredible. His prose are fantastic. His character work is par none. His emotional impact that he has while you're reading the story, his plot, I mean, everything just comes together so perfectly. And I really hope after seeing this video that people who are looking for like a good break, like in their routine of their TBRs, to just give him a chance, because he changed my reading routine and he changed how I perceive him as an author. Now, I will say as a disclaimer, he's not as flashy as some of the other authors. Like, you're not going to get this, like, you're not going to get this, like, oh, there's a giant dragon coming out of the sky. You know what I mean? Like, it, or, you know, massive meteors, explosions coming from wizard sorcerers. It's nothing like that. But what he lacks for in flair, he makes up for in the perfect structured plot, character depth, emotion, and just overall, just like a great story. And there's no pressure to continue on with the works, because most of his works are either standalones, duologies. I think he has one trilogy that he, like, it was his first work, actually. It's The Summer Tree. But Lions of Aurasan, I read this book. We all did. We all read this book. It was our Patreon's book club. We all read this book over a year ago, in February of 2024. It was awesome. Like there was like 40 some odd people in that book club. All of us, except for Levy. Levy even said it was, he liked it. You know what I mean? And that's high regards coming from Levy.
I kind of liked it from Levy is a 5 out of 5 stars for most other people.
Honestly, that's why I still ask for his opinion, because if he even has like an inkling of just like, yeah, I thought it was okay. You know, I'm like, oh, I'm going to love it.
I can't believe that was over a year ago we read this. Yeah. I know, salty question for you, because this is one of my favorite books. This is a gem, The Lions of Aurasan. I can't believe it's just an honorable mentions here, because I guess we'll have to compare to see what's in the top 10. But Salty, is it fair to say this is a fantasy standalone, because it is a bit more historical fiction, cusps that line of fantasy? Because do you want people watching?
There's two moons, damn it. There's two moons. Okay.
Then it's fantasy. It's gotta be fantasy. but people listening in, they're going, okay, top fantasy standalones of all time. Do you want to set some expectations of what kind of genre it is and what to expect, like, going
what's
in?
What's the book about?
Sure. So, I mean, the book is about, so forgive me if I mess up, because I know we have some like real history heads in the Patreon Discord and everything, but it takes place over, I think it's like close to like, what is it, like the Jerusalem area? I could be butchering this.
No.
It's been over a year.
It takes place in Spain.
Yeah. In Spain. Yes. Okay, Spain. Yes. I'm sorry.
It's called Esperanza, I believe, not España. The historical fiction aspect really just takes history and changes some names of places and makes it so close that you know what it is.
But you can see, like, as you're reading it, you can see, like, the similarities between, like, oh, like, this group of people is clearly, like, the Jews, and like these group of people were clearly like the Christians and the Muslims and stuff like that. And like going into that and like picking that out, it's so refreshing, because you're like, oh, like this, like part of this like actually did happen, but it feels fun because like there is like people are like psychics like in the story. So like, and you have like these like seers. So like there's like a little bit of a fantasy aspect to it, and I think that might be like the only like meh part about it, is that there's like not like a huge like magic system and stuff like that. Like, you're not going to get this like epic fantasy like tale. It's just not that kind of story. But what you are going to get is awesome political intrigue between factions of places, and deep intellectual character growth between a group of people, between different cities. And it comes together. You're going to have friendships. You're going to have romance. If you're a romance like enjoyer, GGK is a pretty, he's a pretty horny guy. You know what I mean? There's definitely some scenes in there that'll get the blood going a little bit. So, but again, it's great. Like the whole thing is just tremendous.
It has the best ending I've ever read to a book. There is no more perfect way.
I still think about that ending.
Just clarifying, this is all spoiler free for these books, just clarifying for the audience, but that not saying what the ending is, I think we'll all agree that it is one of the greatest. You can't do it better. It's the perfect ending.
The ending took the score for me from a great to really great book to I was absolutely floored. So the ending is a huge part of why I love the story myself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The ending to that book, I still think about it like to this day.
Yeah.
Like without any spoilers, like I still think about Belmonte. Like I love that character. That like he's awesome. And like his development, you know, from like start to finish is just it's visceral.
Yeah.
So
to give people in the audience like just context of what the story is about, basically, is there are three effective factions, fictional names for the Jews, Christians, and Muslims. In this pseudo fantasy world, you have characters from each kind of faction that do come together in a pseudo friendship. They're apart together for certain circumstances, and then their own tribes basically force them to be pitted against each other. And you have this friction between all three groups and all of these characters, and you get to see the dynamics play between them and their religious and country background. So that is the main focus of the story. If that interests you.
When Duty Calls, you have these two main characters and the ones you're talking about, Salty. It is asking the question of these two people who would be brothers in another life, but they're on opposite sides of a war, and how does that affect the friendship? Or how does that affect, where is your duty? Is it duty to country, duty to your brother, right, duty to your loved ones? And it asks that, and it does it in the most epic proportion of, not epic and grand scale like you said, Salty, but those characters have the most, as Salty would say, gas and aura and all of those words you can use. Yeah. They are enigmatic. They are just, they pull you. They are cool. They are just
got the juice.
Awesome.
Got the
juice. Read. Awesome. Yeah. Salty, anything, any last words on The Lions of Al-Rassan, why people have to read this? And Rich and I, again, reiterating, this is a 5-star book, floored us. Everybody should read this book immediately.
Yeah, I would say if you're in a little bit of a lull, like you're like, oh, I just finished book 3 of such and such a trilogy or whatever. And then you know how sometimes people take that like, oh, like I'm going to take a week break, kind of refresh or whatever. I think this is like the perfect book to just be like, I just want something. It's not that long either. You know what I mean? I think it's only like 450, maybe 500 pages. Like it's not a heavy hitter, but it packs so much inside of those like 500 some odd pages. It's just great. Like I can't recommend it enough. I'm really upset that it didn't make the top 10. I hope somewhere down the line we redo this or have like another revote, or it's just you guys, so I can have at least somebody with enough intelligence to put GGK up there a little bit more, because it's a damn shame that it's not in the top 10.
See, our patrons know what they know how to get us working. It's stroking our egos. That's how it works.
That's what the reason that I included 14 and put them there was just so Lions of Al-Rassan could get in the honorable mentions. You can't not put that in the honorable mentions, at least if it didn't get the top 10. But Salty, thank you. We're gonna continue on to the next one on our honorable mention list. Thank you, Salty.
Quick break from the video to talk about this video sponsor, Displate.
Oh yeah,
they've been with us for a while. Quality metal posters that you put onto the wall with magnets. Great designs. They have designs for your favorite stuff, like Warhammer 4. You're not holding it. Pull it up.
You think we're better at this stuff?
Warhammer 40K. Yeah. I got Wheel of Time in my room. You got Lord of the Rings in your room.
I do.
You should you can use a code TutorRamble to get a discount
on it. TutorRamble, really?
Get away from your college paper posters.
Wow.
Get a display today.
I wish I was cool and I used the code TutorRamble at checkout to get up to 30% off on my displays. If they go to display.com/TutorRamble.
I have a link in description and comment, top comment down below.
Yeah, I have a need for cool designs. And if you want your bookshelves to, behind us like this to have more jazz and spazazz, and that other words, it just looks awesome right next to wherever you want your office, anything, you know them, they're Display. Thank you for sponsoring this episode, and we'll see you back at the top 10 list that we're doing right now.
Thank you very much, Display.
The next one on our list is Elantris.
Elantris
got an honorable mention. This one, so again, we asked all of our patrons to, if they wanted to submit a pitch mm-hmm. for the book. This is one that I don't think a lot of our patrons voted for. Others on our social media did. So nobody wanted to pitch this one. But I know you read it.
Yep.
Would you say it's a top fantasy book of all time? Based on that reaction, I have not read it.
Elantris?
Yeah.
No. It's fine. It's a fine book. I mean, I enjoyed it. But yeah, it's not Sanderson's best.
Was it his first book?
It was his first published book. Yes. However, if I am I don't know if it's in the rest of this list, if it appears somewhere else, but in the same world, in the same magic system, like Emperor's Soul is the novella to Elantris. And I would say it is a far better material. It's one of the best examples of Sanderson's works, but
Emperor's Soul is a top tier book, but how about pitch the ones that
actually the
pitch
one
the ones okay. that the viewers voted for, even though the viewers could be wrong.
Okay, ultimately, if you want to see a great little origin of a lot of Sanderson's character tropes and the types of characters he typically writes and his style, I think Elantris is a good pick.
Okay.
It is I think a very hopeful book. It is a little bit more upbeat than something like Stormlight or Mistborn, and I think those are pretty upbeat. So this was a really positive story, I think. It was a really fun romp, and it's pretty short, so I really enjoyed it myself, but, the magic system is pretty neat, which, yeah, it's all Sanderson.
Neat, okay, yeah, I guess it's an honorable mention.
It's an honorable mention,
and that, since
I can't believe that this is above Lions of Aursand.
It tied.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Still not good. But
both
okay.
of them, I'll start saying the votes. Both of those received 6 votes each. So 6 people submitted. And again, since there were so many people could submit any standalone book, even to get 6 votes was significant.
Yes.
Because you could just say any book that exists that's a fantasy standalone. But yes, so that's Elantris. And I would say, even though I haven't read the book, I do know, because you're coming from that point of view of having read all of other Sanderson's stuff and having read, you know, comparing the Lions of Aursand, then going to Elantris, I imagine very different tone and mood to probably a top starter fantasy book. Maybe you'd recommend that more to somebody getting into the genre and somebody that wants an introduction to Sanderson. Even would you recommend that or not even?
Oh, generally. Yeah. I mean, I'll give an example of our friend Justin.
Yeah.
Elantris is one of his favorite Sanderson novels, and he's read all of Sanderson's works, like all of them. And he still puts Elantris in like his top 3.
There you go.
Of Sanderson's books total.
Awesome. And so our next honorable mention, this is our third, then we'll have one more and we'll get into our top 10. Next honorable mention with 7 votes was The Goblin Emperor.
Oof.
And The Goblin Emperor, we do not have a pitch from one of the patrons, but I will go and read, since you have not read Goblin Emperor. This is the Goodreads pitch and the blurb for The Goblin Emperor, which, by the way, Salty was just talking about our patron Levy here. He has a favorite book of all time and is The Goblin Emperor. So he's the curmudgeon that Salty just built up there.
Also, our good buddy Coop has been trying to get me to read this book forever.
Yes.
And this is one of his favorite books. It's his comfort book. He's read it like many times.
I've heard it's cozy fantasy.
Yeah.
And so here's the blurb for it. It's a tale of deadly court intrigue and a modern classic of fantasy by Locus Award winner and Hugo Nebula and World Fantasy Award finalist Catherine Addison. Okay, here it is. The youngest half-goblin son of the emperor has lived his entire life in exile, distant from the imperial court and the deadly intrigue that suffices it. But when his father and 3 half-brothers in line for the throne are killed in an accident, he has no choice but to take his place as the only surviving rightful heir. Entirely unschooled in the art of court politics, he has no friends, no advisors, and the sure knowledge that whoever assassinated his fathers and brothers could make an attempt on his life at any moment. Surrounded by sycophants eager to curry favor with the naive new emperor and overwhelmed by the burdens of his new life, he can trust nobody. Amid the swirl of plots to depose him, offers of arranged marriages, and the scepter of unknown conspirators who lurk in the shadows, he must quickly adjust to life as the Goblin Emperor. All the while, he's alone and trying to find even a single friend and hoping for the possibility of romance, yet also vigilant against the unseen enemies that threaten him, lest he lose his throne or his life.
I've been wanting to read this book for a while, I hope we get an opportunity to do so soon.
Feeling, that feels like such a fun book to read. I love that pitch of, gives the cozy fantasy vibes. It seems humorous as well, just based on that blurb.
Yeah.
But can't speak much more than you. What's that give you? What do you think? What do you expect
from everything I hear about it? It's small. Yes, it is talking about like emperors, like the assassinations. It seems kind of grand, but apparently it is far more smaller scale of most of the plot is kind of, it's just dialogue and, you know, internal monologue between the new emperor and these small dynamics. And so it is a smaller story, kind of in some way I've heard it's, you know, TV episodes like have like a bottle episode. Apparently this is very similar. Like it's a bottle,
fun,
where most of the plot takes place in a few rooms. It's not that large.
Oh, sweet. Sweet. Our last honorable mention, and by the way, the Goblin Emperor, we will be reading. Our last honorable mention is this author just couldn't get into the top 10. Another Guy Gavriel K book.
Damn.
This one, Tagana, which is on our read list as well.
Yeah.
Tagana, we don't have a pitch for this, but the blurb on Goodreads, this is to give you the quick rundown of what the book's about. A masterful epic of magic, politics, war, and the power of love and hate from the renowned author of the Fëanor Tapestry and Children of Earth and Sky. Tagana is the magical story of Beleaguered land struggling to be free. It is the tale of a people so cursed by the black sorcery of a cruel, despotic king that even the name of their once beautiful homeland cannot be spoken or remembered. But years after the devastation, a handful of courageous men and women embark upon a dangerous crusade to overthrow their conquerors and bring back the dark world, the brilliance of a long-lost name, Tagana. Against the magnificently rendered background of a world both sensuous and barbaric, this sweeping epic of a passionate people pursuing their dream is breathtaking in its vision, changing forever the boundaries of fantasy fiction.
Yeah.
How cool does that sound?
Epic, grand scale, wonderful. I mean, it's Guy Gavriel K. I imagine it's going to be amazing. But again, a real shame that, you know, is Guy Gavriel K like completely snubbed from the entire top 10?
You'll have
list?
To tell me by the top 10.
See? I'll have to find out because that's pretty sad. The fact that both books are not on the list, but at least it's mentioned.
And people watch, definitely comment and let us know which one of these we should elevate to our TBR first, because already Goblin Emperor, Tagana, both of those are ones we're going to read. Just in what order, at how soon?
Yeah, and the other two have read. Yes. Elantris and
you've read
Lions of Alderaan. You haven't read Elantris?
Not yet, no. Well, because I've read other Sanderson stuff, and I imagine...
Yeah, for the most part. It's not the most pressing book to read.
Maybe I'll get to it, but again, not pressing. Okay, our top 10, it's time.
Finally.
To actually get into the top 10 list.
20 minutes in,
You came for a ramble, okay? we can't even let our top 10 lists be quick and punchy. Okay.
Never.
Number 10. Oh, yeah. This one we are going to read as well. Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell by Susanna Clarke. This received 8 votes of the over 300 and something. You have it right behind you, Rich.
There you go. I got it right behind me.
Yes. This is Susanna Clarke, and it is known as her best work, even though she has Piranesi, which is something we love. Do you know anything about the book? I can read off the pitch we were sent by...
The wonderful thing is, I know nothing.
Okay.
I know nothing about this book.
Okay.
So, in some ways, I kind of want to be blind, but for the sake of the video, sake of the pitch, tell me about it.
So, this was pitched by our patron, the White Walters. Thank you very much for sending in this pitch. So, here it is. You want to pull it up and read it off, Rich?
Yeah, I'll read it off.
All right. It's it starts there and ends. It goes down a little bit. Okay, perfect.
All right. Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell is a big British book by the author of Piranesi, Susanna Clarke. It was published September 8th, 2004 by Bloomsbury and settles in at around 1,000 pages. It has a 3.87 stars on Goodreads, which is a good sign.
That is, because when Goodreads goes sub 4, you know there's something special.
Yeah, it's either real good, like niche and amazing, or dog, like hot dog water. Dog water. It's one of the two.
Yeah.
Anyway, the story takes place in an alternate history England during the Napoleonic Wars. Throughout the three parts of the book, we encounter and follow Mr. Norrell and his enthusiastic student, Jonathan Strange, the last of the nation's practical magicians who are on a mission to reclaim and make British magic great again. The synopsis from Goodreads is as follows. The year is 1806. England is beleaguered by the long war with Napoleon, and centuries have passed since practical magicians faded into the nation's past. But scholars of this glorious history discover that one remains, the reclusive Mr. Norrell, whose displays of magic sends a thrill through the country. Proceeding to London, he raises a beautiful woman from the dead and summons an army of ghostly ships to terrify the French. Yet the cautious, fusty Norrell is challenged by the emergence of another magician, the brilliant novice Jonathan Strange. Young, handsome, and daring, Strange is the very antithesis of Norrell. So begins a dangerous battle between these two great men, which overwhelms that between England and France. And their own obsessions and secret dabblings with the dark arts are going to cause more trouble than they can imagine. This book is truly magical. The magic and world building builds on and incorporates real legends and fairy stories from the British Isles. The existence of fairies and magic is an acknowledged fact of the world, although most believe both magic and fairies to have gone away. There's truly a sense of wonder and the other, to the magic and world building, while also keeping a good amount of whimsy. The writing is a passage in Regency Victorian writers thinking of Jane Austen, but allows the reader to look far more into the minds of our wonderful cast of characters. You'll find a funny spelling from the time, like C-H-U-S-E, because the book has been written in world. Since the book is a product of its own world, it is a historical account, and as such feature quite a lot of footnotes, which some of which explain in-world legends, while some are based on stories we can all recognize. For example, in the connected short story collection set in the same world, The Ladies of Grace Adieu and other stories, readers may find reference to a certain hole in the ground, which is not a nasty hole.
Ooh.
This book is about a battle of magic, but not in the sense of wizards throwing fireballs at each other. Instead, it is a sprawling account of discovery, public opinion, war, and the possibilities, dangers, and wonder that magic presents us with. The book is long, but it's worth it. Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell was my favorite read, this being, you know, the White Walters from our Patreon, favorite read of 2022, and it was, in every sense of the word, enchanting. I'll hope you give it a go. Signed, the White Walters.
Wow, so that is a book we've been meaning to read as well, and a great way to pitch it as well. And knowing Susanna Clarke's writing from Piranesi excites me more to see how she does a long, thoughtful, enchanting book, because that is a way of describing how she writes is enchanting. Regardless of what this book will, maybe the epic sprawl changes the vibe that you get from Piranesi. I imagine it's not the same thing, but I feel like I will get that childlike wonder.
Sure.
And having not read the book, so I don't want to speak any more than that. That is the pitch. He has read the book, and plenty of you all submitted, and that is that hit the top 10, number 10 on the list.
Fair enough. For fantasy standalones. I'm glad it's on the list then. But I will say, correct me if I'm wrong, is Susanna Clarke, I believe one of the things she's writing now, like currently in the works, is a sequel or novella to Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell? Isn't that true?
I don't know.
I believe that was the next thing
being
worked on. That
could be the case. I haven't heard that.
I thought I heard that rumor. So correct me in the comments if I'm wrong.
You want to go on to our next one?
Number nine.
Number nine is actually tied for number eight. So this this is number eight along with the next one that we'll read off. But this is The Heroes by Joe Abercrombie.
Ah. Which, so this is the next, the one. I have not gotten to this one. That is my next Joe Abercrombie book.
Yes. This is the half of these books we haven't read because we asked the viewers to pitch these. We could have our own standalone tops after we read more of these as well. But this was not pitched by anybody, so I'll give off the blurb on Goodreads. The Heroes. Okay. They say Black Dows killed more men than Winter and clawed his way to the throne of the North up a hill of skulls. The King of the Union, ever a jealous neighbor, is not about to stand smiling by while he claws his way any higher. The orders have been given, and the armies are toiling through the northern mud. Thousands of men are converging on a forgotten ring of stones, on a worthless hill, and an unimportant valley, and they've brought a lot of sharpened metal with them. For glory, for victory, for staying alive. Oh, and it's Joe Abercrombie.
Yeah.
I do want to say that there was some debate in the Discord of whether this is a standalone. Now, it is technically a standalone where, hey, this is a book you can read. And it is in its complete arc and not a trilogy, not a series. However, it is in the First Law universe, and the character there, Black Dow, is in the original trilogy of First Law. You see his character. And so this is a character which you get a lot more context from if you read the First Law universe.
I imagine you could read this out of order, but you do spoil yourself on, I think... Ultimately, I think unimportant details from the original trilogy. I don't think it would ruin the original trilogy if you read this one out of order from everything I've heard. But that's just my opinion on a book I haven't even read yet, just heard about. Now, the coolest aspect of the book, I'm assuming you know, should we tell the audience?
I don't know it.
I'll give the structure of the book then. Yeah. I think this is most...
I do know that, yes.
I think this is the well-known aspect that if you're listening now and you're thinking, like, should I read this book, this would be the thing that would interest you.
Mm.
The Heroes takes place, the entire book is over the course of one battle, basically. And either like a single day or like a few days, it's basically continuous. But the really cool, unique structure is... the POV switches every time the main character dies. So when the POV that you're following is killed, you now follow the person who killed him. And then moving on until that person dies, so on and so forth. And so that's the structure of the novel. I don't know how many POV shifts there are, so who knows? Probably the last POV is the... maybe the one that survives, I would imagine. It's kind of how it works. That's such a cool...
I hope that's cool not structure. A later in the book twist that we're supposed to come, because I did know that. Would that have been cool to read the book and find out, oh, that's a cool, unique twist?
I think that's the pitch of the book.
Okay.
Like that's
Having not read, I don't know if that's when that happens. Is that chapter one? Is that chapter five? I don't know.
I think if you don't give that, like there's nothing else to really talk about to pitch this book.
Gotcha.
That's kind of my thought. Like that's the unique angle of the book.
There you go. Hey, so The Heroes, if you want to go Joe Abercrombie and with that context of there is the First Law trilogy before that, and that is one of the standalones between that, and then you get to Age of Madness later. So that is The Heroes. Also tied for number eight, The Spear Cuts Through Water. And this, we have a pitch from Levy. If you want to go ahead and read off Levy's pitch, he had a great pitch in the when we were doing the book club.
He did.
Talks. And this isn't exactly the pitch he gave there, because this is based on what he just had written down, but it was very compelling. And... just the only thing I know about it before reading the pitch is apparently it's written in both first, second, and third person point of view. And that just
if you
want to
challenge
cool.
yourself, apparently this is the book for you.
That seems awesome. So do you want to go ahead and read his pitch?
Yeah, I'll read Levy's pitch. All right. So the Goodreads blurb, he put that in the beginning here. Two warriors shepherd an ancient god across a broken land to end the tyrannical reign of a royal family in this new epic fantasy from the author of The Vanished Birds. The people suffer under the centuries-long rule of the Moon Throne, the royal family, the despotic emperor, and his monstrous sons, the Three Terrors, hold the countryside in their choking grip. They bleed the land and oppress their citizens with a frightful powers they inherited from the god locked under the palace. But that god cannot be contained forever. With the aid of June, a guard broken by his guilt-stricken past, and Kima, an outcast fighting for his future, the god escapes from her royal captivity and flees from her own children. The triplet terrors, who would drag her back to her unholy prison. And so it is that she embarks with her young companions on a 5-day pilgrimage in search of freedom and a way to end the Moon Throne forever. The journey ahead will be more dangerous than any of them could have imagined. Both a sweeping adventure story and an intimate exploration of identity, legacy, and belonging, The Spear Cuts Through Water is an ambiguous and profound saga that will transport and transform you, and is like nothing you've ever read before. Now, here are some excerpts from Levy's review. I've been fooled by internet hype before, but this time it was really worth it. There isn't much you can say about this book other than, wow, The Spear Cuts Through Water is an absolutely incredible blend of fantasy, adventure, and deep emotional storytelling. Jimenez, yeah. Thank you.
I was corrected plenty of times. I said it wrong.
So I appreciate
it. No, I am not better than now. That is just me getting corrected and projecting.
I will take it.
Yeah, yeah.
Jimenez has created a world straight out of myth and legend, with characters you will fall in love with and root for to the very end. Continue on. This is not your standard fantasy book. I would call the style experimental, but in this case, I think the risk pays off. The book has passages that regularly swap between tenses and perspective. It can be a little confusing at first, but once you get the hang of it, it will be easy to follow. I found it beautiful and poetic. It gave me a sense that a myth was being passed down to me and was packed with memorable lines.
I can't wait to read this one as well.
Same here. Levy's pitch during our last book pitch meeting was so good, and I'm super excited for it. I can't wait till I actually get to read it. Also, the cover is sick. It's one of the coolest looking covers.
You have it here, don't you?
I have it somewhere. It's on the shelf.
It is someplace.
Is it behind me?
I knew it was on your desk. I don't know if it moved from there. It
probably moved from my desk somewhere.
Oh, well. But just trust. It looks very, very cool.
It's right behind you.
Oh, is it?
Yep. There you go.
There it is. Cool. Oh, yeah.
Look at that. One, not enough books have the blue-green combo colors. Not a lot of books have this color scheme, and I like it a lot. So, big fan. And so far, this list is starting off pretty great.
So far, it's worth it. Do you think it's okay that Guy Gavin Roquet got stuck to the honorable mentions?
No, I'm still bitter about that. We're going to have to see. This list better be like nothing but aces afterward. So
my takeaway from that pitch is, if you want an experimental, new, fresh book, that is for somebody that's looking for something different.
Yeah. So the pitch to that is similar to what Salty was saying before. You just finished a grand trilogy epic, and you're like, hey, look, I've been reading a bunch of big epic fantasy, and I want a little something different. I'm getting a little burned out on my fantasy, or I'm getting a little burned out on my sci-fi, whatever genre you're currently reading.
Yep.
And you want something fresh and new, this seems like the pick.
Definitely. And we have now our number 7. We're in the top 7 now.
Alrighty.
This one, and this is our last tie, then the rest are, the top 5 are
clear.
But this also tied for 6. So these next two tied for votes, and they each got 12 votes, respectively. Sorry, I didn't say the last ones. The Heroes and Spirit Cuts Through Water got 10 votes each. So these got 12 and 12 votes. The first one is Yumi and the Nightmare Painter, which was a Sanderson book that he wrote name's not coming to mind.
He wrote this, there are his secret project.
That's it, yeah.
Basically, he wrote a bunch of books on top of, you know, Wind and Truth and all of his other books that he was writing at the time,
yep,
because COVID, and he did an experimental Kickstarter that broke records. I have personally read all the secret projects now because it was a bet with Austin.
Yes, and that's why I had to dress up as Syl as, yes, Dragonsteel. That, you don't have to look that up. It's fine. It was a great time. And so this pitch, Rachel, Salty's wife, pitched, and do you want to go ahead and read that pitch for, yeah, Yumi? And then you could add on since you've also read the book.
Sure. Yeah. All right. So this is Rachel's pitch here. Mm. Yumi surprised me and reinstilled my faith in Sanderson's ability to write. The ending to this book cemented it as an unforgettable standalone. Somehow he managed a Sanderlanch that rivals his other works while also threading in the emotional elements you expect in a romance. This book does have its slower moments and isn't a revelation. I always fear hyping up a book can be bad for expectations, but I truly loved Yumi and the Nightmare Painter.
People I know love this. A lot say it's their favorite secret project as well. I know Summer, for example, Summer's admin friend and on Patreon, mm-hmm, too. So Summer has a tattoo based off of Yumi and the Nightmare Paper. People love this book. And I would
agree. It's my favorite of the secret projects, yeah, by a country mile.
So I'm also getting the aspect of this isn't a catch-all, but I've heard just my vibes on what I've been told about Yumi Nightmare Painter is if people liked the movie Your Name.
Sure.
I've heard that. So Your Name is one of my favorite films ever. It's an anime and it's fantastic, but I've heard people compare the two. You've read it. What do you think about Yumi?
It's an apt comparison in many ways. I believe it actually is a direct inspiration to Sanderson. I believe he talked, okay, about that.
Sweet.
But yeah, this one, if you know the movie of Your Name, very similar structure
and
not structure, no, but
trope.
Okay. It's a setup. The setup to the actual novel. I'm trying to say it without actually spoiling anything, it for, yeah, anyone else. But no, it does have a really great romance. All the stuff that Sanderson's great at, the world building is really nice. I think it's some of his better writing.
Okay.
And dialogue is far more organic. Sometimes with Sanderson's writings, I find just like there's a little too see-through and a little less pizzazz and, yeah, like cute moments and like, ooh, the nice tension banter back and forth with characters. This one really has it. I think it has more beautiful descriptions than what he normally writes.
Is it considered romanticy?
I don't know if it is, but I would say it's appropriate to call it that.
It is.
It ultimately is I think the central focus is a romance. So it's a romance fantasy novel. However, I wouldn't put it in the same, it's romance, not smut. Very, very clearly, it's not just a lust novel. It actually is like more banter back and forth, the will they, won't they, or like it's more about the actual relationship rather than just.
You just don't like the label hot, because you say fantasy romance, not, or you say romance fantasy, not romanticy, because as soon as you say that, you have a bad connotation with that.
Yeah, I don't, okay, want people to think like, oh, this is basically ACOTAR. No, no, it is like an actual romance, not just.
However, lust. People that like ACOTAR and love those kind of books,
they probably will like it. Will, yeah,
also like, because I know the same, like Summer, I think, loves, not, I don't know thoughts on the first book, but loves several books in that series, at least book, mm-hmm, two, and loves Yumi as well. So it's one of those. I've also heard a lot of romanticism is a gateway, then people read others like Sanderson. And, mm-hmm, then this could be, if you just read a romanticism book, and then this is another, if you want to put it, labels are whatever you want to label it. If fantasy romance or romanticism, this could be something that hits that spot for anybody interested in that. I do actually know that this one is, I think it's the top, not that Goodreads mean anything, but I think it's the top rated on Goodreads compared to the other secret projects.
That makes sense to me.
Regardless, it seems very charming, and I think of the secret projects, that would be the first I'd pick up. You'd also recommend?
Completely agree. Well, if you only have time, or you only really want to read one of the secret projects from Sanderson, I would say pick that one up, okay, most definitely.
Awesome. That is, so that was number seven, but tied for six. So our other number six is Babel by R.F. Kuang. And we don't have a pitch for this, so I'll read off the Goodreads description and the blurb. So this is Babel. From award-winning author R.F. Kuang comes Babel, a historical fantasy epic that grapples with the student revolutions, colonial resistance, and the use of language and translation as the dominating tool of the British Empire. I don't know how to say this, but traditore, an act of translation is always an act of betrayal. Okay, here we go. So, 1828, Robin Swift, orphaned by cholera.
Interesting quote.
Which quote? Oh.
Translation.
That first part.
Act of betrayal. Very interesting.
Interesting. 1828, Robin Swift, orphaned by cholera in Canton, is brought to London by the mysterious Professor Lavelle. There, he trains for years in Latin, ancient Greek, and Chinese, all in preparation for the day he'll enroll in Oxford University's prestigious Royal Institute of Translation, also known as Babel. The Tower and its students are the world's center for translation and, more importantly, magic. Silverworking, the art of manifesting the meaning lost in translation using enchanting silver bars, has made the British unparalleled in power as the arcane craft serves the Empire's quest for colonization. For Robin, Oxford is a utopia dedicated to the pursuit of knowledge. But knowledge obeys power, and as a Chinese boy raised in Britain, Robin realizes serving Babel means betraying his motherland. As his studies progress, Robin finds himself caught between Babel and the shadowy Hermes Society, an organization dedicated to stopping imperial expansion. When Britain pursues an unjust war with China over silver and opium, Robin must decide. Can powerful institutions be changed from within, or does
coverage varies by plan? View contracts and exclusions at endurancewarranty.com.
If you're driving a car or truck with an expired warranty and suddenly lost your transmission or needed a full engine repair, would a $4,000 repair bill leave you stranded? I'm Danica Patrick. Don't get caught off guard with a vehicle breakdown. Choose the company I trust. Endurance. No matter the mileage, if your vehicle is less than 20 years old, Endurance offers comprehensive auto protection plans for any budget. Protection on the drivetrain, electrical, transmission, AC, and more. Plus, benefits like 24/7 roadside assistance and rental car reimbursement on any plan. Endurance handles everything from making the claim through the repair process to paying the certified mechanic of your choice. Don't get caught off guard with a vehicle breakdown. Act now and get one full year of elite benefits, a $2,000 value, free.
Visit endurancewarranty.com for your fast free quote today. That's endurancewarranty.com.
Coverage varies by plan. View contracts and exclusions at endurancewarranty.com.
If you're driving a car or truck with an expired warranty and suddenly lost your transmission or needed a full engine repair, would a $4,000 repair bill leave you stranded? I'm Danica Patrick. Don't get caught off guard with a vehicle breakdown. Choose the company I trust, Endurance. No matter the mileage, if your vehicle is less than 20 years old, Endurance offers comprehensive auto protection plans for any budget. Protection on the drivetrain, electrical, transmission, AC, and more. Plus, benefits like 24/7 roadside assistance and rental car reimbursement on any plan. Endurance handles everything from making the claim through the repair process to paying the certified mechanic of your choice. Don't get caught off guard with a vehicle breakdown. Act now and get one full year of elite benefits, a $2,000 value, free.
Visit endurancewarranty.com for your fast free quote today. That's endurancewarranty.com.
Revolution always requires violence, and that is Babel.
Cool.
Go ahead.
I've heard good things about this book. However, so we're off to start of the like more negative side of things, or at least my caution is I've read the previous book one of the previous series from R.F. Kuang.
Which is that?
The Poppy Wars.
Okay.
Which I didn't particularly like that book. We have a friend that's read the rest of the trilogy. I think that book is like, it is well written. It's a well written book. I just really didn't identify with the story she was trying to tell with those characters, and ultimately like felt very disconnected from the themes and the characters themselves from that book.
At least so this I'm book, hoping you know exactly the themes this book's going over.
That is
it's
true.
Very clear from the get-go.
That is true.
I've heard it compared a lot to Blood Over Brighthaven. And if you've read Blood Over Brighthaven and loved it, this would probably be your book. Rich and I, so our if it's exactly like Blood Over Brighthaven, I don't know, just basing off the blurb. Emma Wang's just a fantastic writer. So Blood Over Brighthaven to us was just, had such great parts and moments. The most flawed or disappointing thing to me was the thematic elements and was the message. And whether that was just the simplicity or heavy-handedness of it, or just there were some flaws in how it was structured to where the actual thesis statement of the book, to me, which you can go check out our review, but the thesis statement of the book, which we'll let you go read, seemed to...
disconnected from the actual story being told of like, yeah, the thesis was not proven with the story of the book. So when you kind of have this moment at the end,
it didn't navigate,
it doesn't land the same way.
Yeah, I'm staying very loose for anybody that wants to check out our Blood of Brighthaven review. Yeah. We go into depth of our opinions on that. But
maybe this book maybe it's lands different. That message. Like, I have no idea.
No idea as well. But Babel, I've heard this one is one of those that you love it, or a lot of people complain. I've heard both sides, but it's gotten enough votes to get number 6 from our polling here.
Fair enough.
That is Babel, and now we're into the top 5. Okay, it's time.
All right.
So far, Guy Gavroil case snubbed. Is it still worth it? We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. I'm already a couple books here that they were put above Guy Gavroil case is already off to a bad start.
We have a return author here that was already in the top 10.
Okay.
We have another Joe Abercrombie.
You know what? I'm always welcome to it.
This is Best Served Cold, was number 5 top voted as favorite fantasy standalone from our audience. And we have a video that was submitted by Dropped Pocket. If you want to pull up video file, and we'll go ahead and play his pitch of Best Served Cold.
Sounds good.
Best Served Cold is a revenge story about a mercenary whose boss is a powerful duke, but thinks that she might be getting popular enough with the people and the armies to pose a threat to his rule. So to solve that issue, he decides to murder her and her brother. After she survives, she pulls together a group of people to help kill the 7 people responsible. The only issue is, how trustworthy of a group of people can somebody who kills people for money get together? It's a man who's sick of violence, a drunken old mentor, a silent enforcer with a love of numbers, and a poisoner and his young apprentice. Abercrombie really flexes his morally gray character writing, with characters you'll laugh with, cheer on, shed tears for, and characters you're not sure you should be rooting for, become your favorite, and all the characters are characters you would never ever want to meet in real life. Best Served Cold delivers everything that I want in a fantasy book. It has heists, sword fights, battles, brawls, backstabbing, brutal murders, humor, all written into a world that feels as dark as it is real, with a guy who earned the nickname of Lord Grimdark. Joe Abercrombie's books, in my opinion, are best enjoyed in audio formats. The narrator is fantastic. It is part of the First Law universe, but can easily be read as a standalone with no needs for spoilers.
I'm glad you clarified at the end there too, because that, similar to The Heroes, it has that similar standalone aspect to it, right? It's in the First Law universe. However, it is one of those that is not, it's not a trilogy. It's just a standalone as a part of a wider universe.
Now, I have actually read this book with our patron members as well.
Also, thank you for the pitch, Drop Pocket. Yeah,
thank you very much.
You agree with this pitch?
I do agree. Yeah. In many ways, I think the best way to put this is, I kind of see this book as almost a combination of the First Law trilogy into one book.
Okay.
I see a lot of like characters that scratch the same itch, very kind of like, okay, this is a combination of these two characters. And like the characters in Best Served Cold fill very similar roles as the ones in First Law, and also I think you would like it for its ending. Its ending is a different some have a different direction than the characters in First Law.
Okay.
So I am positive that you will like the ending more. I think it's more poignant of like, you see success and failure, not just...
Don't give away too much to people. But
I'm just being like, it's more positive, I think, than First Law. If that's, I don't think that's a spoiler, but yeah, if you're reading First Law and you're like, man, that's a downer. Next book's a little bit better. I think so.
Should we allow that? Is that okay?
I think I'm not giving anything away. Stuff happens. Okay. I'm just saying it's a slightly more upbeat. Right. I don't know.
Okay. Hey, like, I'm just arbitrary.
If we can't tell people tell me anything,
to play, people tell me to play ref. I get comments. I get comments. They're like,
we're talking about books and whether you should read or not. If I can't say like basic stuff of
to this some one's people, slightly to more some upbeat. People, it's not bait. Okay, you know
fine.
What?
You know what? The list should just be list name and say nothing about it.
All right. Oh, it's the ending of this book, which gives you this feeling at the end of the book. Is you know, I'm just saying.
I'm playing refs.
Okay, I know. I've been told by one person. That's it. It's not even.
Okay. This is why you don't listen to the people. You take their opinion under advisement.
It was your mother.
And subsequently, ignore.
It was your mother.
I'll still stand by my point.
Screw my parents.
Sorry, Bob. But I have to stand by it.
I'm like, it wasn't your mom. but Best Served Cold is that it's very Abercrombie coded as well. I'd imagine you expect, as Rob was saying, as you're saying, you have these characters that you don't want to root for, but you're following them, and these grim characters in a messed up world. And you're saying if you read the First Law trilogy and like that, you're also going to like this.
Generally. Yes. Okay. In the same way, if First Law itself was a little too downer for you, I think there is more light in this series, in that standalone, than there is in First Law.
Awesome. So that
not to say completely, but still.
Best Served Cold received 14 votes, by the way, and this next one, our top four now, our number four received 15 votes, and that is Warbreaker. This is our second time seeing a Sanderson book up here for Fantasy Standalone List. We have a video sent in, if you want to pull that up.
Yep.
And this, I believe, was sent by Cade, if I have that right. Yes, here we go. All right.
Alrighty. Play it here.
Hello, my name is SFF Book Introductions, and when I first saw this video prompt from the fellows at Tutu Ramble, I thought of my favorite two standalones. It just so happens that my taste is so good that both appear on this list. That being said, the best on this list, Warbreaker by Brandon Sanderson. This roughly 200,000 word novel takes place in a fantasy realm of Helendrin on the world of Nalthus. We find ourselves with the two main female protagonists, Vivenna and Ciri, sisters with a loving relationship who are put through a predicament from their birth. Their small mountain kingdom is politically under siege by the much stronger government of Helendrin and the capital city of Tallir. To keep their culture alive and the community from destruction, a deal was made with the opposing side. For the sake of peace, the eldest daughter of the kingdom is to marry the god king of Tallir. While one sister sees this as her duty, the other strives to rescue her from the hands of the tyrants of the city. The rest of the story follows them as they meet new challenges and overcome obstacles. Not to mention the plethora of side characters, such as Denth and Tong Fa, who are honestly hilarious, and I laughed for the first time to a book. And a personal favorite of mine, Light Song. He's a god who doesn't particularly believe in his godhood. Each person has one breath, which allows them to see color and feel emotions. As if you obtain more breaths from voluntary gifting, then you can gain more control over the senses, as well as you gain prolonged life. With color and breath, one can awaken objects that are inanimate and get them to do their bidding. How much control one has over this depends on the amount of breaths used. Easily the best standalone fantasy book on this list. Thank you.
Now, we've both read Warbreaker.
Let's have, what are your thoughts on it? I've been giving a lot of my thoughts on this list. What are your thoughts on Warbreaker?
This is an awesome book. I love Warbreaker. And it's not my favorite fantasy standalone, but it's of Sanderson. It's up there. It goes Emperor's Hold in this, most likely, for a standalones of Sanderson has. And although I haven't read Yumi, so who knows. But with Warbreaker, I would pitch this book and tell people to read this, especially if you are a newer fantasy reader, of read this. This is just going to hit. It has such a wide breadth of who would enjoy this book, but also if you're experienced in fantasy too, will also hit. Warbreaker, as Cade put it, just to clarify some things, the initial hook, which is so cool, is that there's this father of a small kingdom who has two daughters, one Ciri, one Vivenna, and he is to send Vivenna, his oldest daughter, to go marry this King Susbron, who doesn't speak at all. He is mute, is strange, just weird king that we know little about. We've heard things, that's all. It's just this enigma. And the father, looking at Vivenna and looking at Ciri, for reasons that you'll see in the very first couple chapter, very first chapter of the book, can't in his heart send Vivenna to go marry Susbrunn. Is a good father. You can see from his perspective, good father, but he decides to, instead of sending his older daughter, who was meant to go do this, secretly changes and sends his younger daughter instead. And he's very, very sad about doing it, but he does it for, yeah. So
I don't know if that makes him a particularly good father.
No. You read the book and you see that it's not an Abercrombie character that does this of like, oh yeah, toward it. He does this, and it sets you up in the situation of Ciri, the younger daughter, is sent off to go marry this other king because he favors the older daughter, and he's not a, you know, stepmother trope character. By the way, the father's not even in this. It's just the start of the book. The father sends off younger daughter and is like doing it with a tear in his eye, but obviously bad. It's still, oh my god, you're preferring your older daughter. So it's just that begins the book, and Vivenna, who has trained her whole life to take upon this task and marry the king, is now not doing it. And Ciri, the younger daughter, who never thought this would be her life, now is thrust into this situation because of her father making that decision. But then the rest of it, the magic system, is very cool, and everybody has life and breath, and you have to give away your breath to somebody else. In order, actually, they give them to the gods in this world, and the one character that is the best character in this book, Light Song, is a god who doesn't believe in his own divinity, and that concept of he is constantly self-reflecting and sarcastic and trying to contemplate why he was given this godhood, what was his past life, because the gods here, they don't remember their earlier parts of their life. They wake up and they are a god, but they can't remember why they became a god, and he's constantly trying to search of who is he, why is he, what is his purpose, and seeing that from a god's perspective, who their only way they're able to function is by taking the breath and lifeblood of others, makes him feel even more guilty about what he's doing. So you have an awesome witty character of Light Song along with this other plot with Ciri going off to marry this king, and that is just the beginning of the book. So it has a fantastic hook on both those ends, and it's a very, very fun ride. What would you say?
I completely agree. It's definitely a really fun one. I read this book years ago before we started a YouTube channel.
Same, yeah.
And the plot details and certain moments still stick with me today. It's definitely one of the more memorable Sanderson books that I've read.
So, yes,
highly recommend it. It's a great book.
Yeah, great. What's your Ramble rating for it?
Right out of the gate,
yeah.
Like, I can't even remember my rating.
I read this before we also did the channel too.
Yeah, exactly. So I would say 4.25. Really great,
solid. I'll give it a 4.5. Spectacular book. This is a one you should read. This is really, really a solid. But yes, okay. Let's go to our top three.
Alrighty, the big three.
The big three. Number three. We have David here to pitch this one. This is the one and only, got 17 votes of the 300 something odd that we had pulled out. It's The Hobbit. David, hello. Howdy.
What's up, guys?
What's going on?
Good to be here. I'm here with, I've actually got two copies of this book. I picked this one up last year. Oh, that blur. The blur is getting in the way. But this is the 75th anniversary. And turns out I actually, my mom had gotten me this book years ago. So I've got this old leather bound. Shout out to my mom. That's right, Mom. I made it on to a ramble. So. We're here to pitch The Hobbit, I guess. So,
yeah, what is this book? I haven't heard of it.
Yeah, no one's ever heard of this book. Give it to us.
Well, let me put it to you this way. So I don't know why you guys read sci-fi and fantasy. I personally read sci-fi and fantasy because I want those large-scale epic stories, complex human characters, bunch of kind of wild plot threads with subtle little seeds that are weaving together to blow your mind, some never before explored ideas or magic. That being said, The Hobbit really isn't that, right? So, and it's still one of my favorite books of all time, a pillar in the fantasy genre for a reason. So off the bat, Wikipedia describes this book as a children's novel. And yes, you definitely can read it to your kids, give it to your kids. I actually personally didn't come to Tolkien until later in life, when I wanted to go back and read the greats, when I was diving into the genre. And I still had an absolute blast, specifically with the narrative voice, a big standout for me. Mm-hmm. Found myself having a laugh or two, maybe even shed a tear towards the end. I didn't, but Some might. And don't be undersold, all right? At its core here, we have the purest form of adventure story. We've got the non-confrontational, quiet, comfortable Bilbo Baggins, a hobbit who lives in the Shire, a peaceful home out in Middle-earth. He's whisked away from home when a legendary wizard recruits him as a burglar for a band of dwarves looking to reclaim their inheritance. And he starts off just as scared of the dangers of Middle-earth as you or I would be. But we see character growth and budding bravery. But at the same time, he's still able to hold on what makes him so pure at the core, to stand up for what he believes in when it counts. We see characters having to overcome their selfish desires, put aside old spats to band together to do the right thing. And keeping it spoiler-free here, but we may or may not run into a dragon somewhere along. Hinted on by a few covers, so I felt like that was safe. Listen, it's a fairly short read. It's an awesome time. Two bonuses with this one. First of all, you get an accessible taste of Tolkien's amazing legendary world of Middle-earth. It'll set you up right up for the deep dive into his legendary Lord of the Rings trilogy. And this is my hot take. Personally, I think that the first Hobbit movie is a slammer of cinema.
The Hobbit movie?
The first one. The first one. I said it was my hot take because they stretched it a bit.
But fair enough.
First one I thought was a pretty solid adaptation. I had a good time with it. But yeah, I mean, it's The Hobbit. I'm sure everyone watching has heard of it and probably read it. But, you know, Tolkien's a legend for a reason. And me, even as someone who doesn't really have the sort of nostalgia associated with it that I think a lot of other people do who were into Lord of the Rings as a kid, I still had a blast with it. Reading it at the ripe age of 22. So,
David, is this a hot take to say of The Hobbit and Lord of the Rings trilogy, The Hobbit's my favorite book of the four?
It would be mine as well. I think Return of the King slots in right behind for me. But I'm with you there. But I think it might be a hot take, but honestly, I've heard that before you, Austin.
Really?
You have, David? Yeah, that's my favorite of the four.
That's a shocker.
I think it's tight. The narrative voice, I mean, people want to dog on Tolkien, not dog on Tolkien's prose. Allow me to clarify. There might be some debate as to whether, you know, it holds up in digestibility in the modern day. Whereas I think The Hobbit, you know, I think even for a younger audience, it will have a lot of fun with it. Mm-hmm. And and just to, so I don't stain my name here, The Lord of the Rings is known for its prose, but it can be dense. So. The Hobbit's a good accessible time. So
I have to say for the record, mm-hmm. Lord of the Rings books, have still held to me of the deepest emotional connection I've ever had reading a novel other than Lonesome Dove. And it's close, but those books are masterpieces of fantasy.
Oh yeah, and why didn't the trilogy get in the top 10 standalone list then, huh?
How many times do I have to say it? We literally have it on shirts. Democracy is cringe. The people are wrong.
It's a trilogy. That's why it wasn't on the standalone list.
They could have cheated. They could have cheated.
Just said the Lord of the Rings.
I was going to say, Rich. They could have cheated.
Actually, it is one book, right? David, everybody does say that. So.
Oh, the Lord of the Rings? I read them all in that bind up. That's how Tolkien intended it.
Same. I read it as one book.
We were getting some pushback on you, David, of people saying that The Hobbit isn't a standalone.
No, give me a break. We have Best Served Cold and The Heroes on the list. This existed on its own for 13 years before. I think actually a little more than that.
I think because it was 1930s.
Well, 37
to like
and then
54.
Lord of the Rings at the 50s. So
It was written as an intention to be a standalone. And then he was asked like, hey, you need to write more. Yeah. And then he did.
Yes.
A lot of modern iterations of The Hobbit, Tolkien went back and edited a particular scene to allow it to a little closer to The Lord of the Rings, but still at the same time, it is most certainly a standalone, especially if you got those Abercrombies on those or on the list. I mean, I've gotten a lot of pushback suggesting I wanted to read those because I haven't finished the First Law trilogy yet. So.
Well, The Hobbit is very charming. It's obviously his funniest book because of the four you got with Tolkien. I mean, of those four. So if you like more of the humor, childlike wonder, it is definitely it's not your epic fantasy. It's your adventure. It's everybody knows Bilbo.
it's the best example from the essay that we read on fairy stories from Tolkien, where he talks about how fantasy or fairy stories correctly written is enjoyable by both children and adults.
Yep.
The Hobbit is the answer of like this is how you do it.
And he didn't
of any age will love this book.
And he didn't write, he doesn't think you should write something to dumb it down for children. He's writing it for adults, but everybody should be able to enjoy in that sense of you can still read this to your children. And that is something that people should do as well. If you haven't read The Hobbit yet, you got kids, now's the time to do it and read it to your kids. It's very, even though the prose, as you were saying, David, could be dense or complicated, I think it's just still reads very well to all ages. I guess there is an age where you need to have some reading comprehension.
Well, I was trying to say that The Hobbit, I think, is more accessible than The Lord of the Rings to a younger
definitely
audience.
Certainly. Yeah.
And actually, just since you brought up that On Fairy Stories video, I did want to throw in something you guys mentioned there was, I'm not sure if I'm totally on the nail with this, but Tolkien was saying something about, the world feeling very lived in, presented as reality. Mm-hmm. As we've mentioned, you're not necessarily getting the full scope of the epic complex Middle Earth, but it definitely, the piece of it you get feels very real, and you can totally believe that there's a lot more beyond. So I'll grant it to all those who are calling it not a standalone. That'll definitely whet your appetite for some more Middle Earth. So and it serves that purpose.
Heck yeah.
Fair enough.
All has been said about The Hobbit. David, you added some great stuff onto that. I think anything else you got, David, to convince people if they haven't read this classic? Because there's lots out there. A lot of people have heard The Hobbits and just haven't picked it up yet and go, oh, okay, maybe they're more into modern fantasy. Can you convince that person to read The Hobbit?
Yeah, I mean, well, first of all, it's short. I'll give you that.
Yeah.
But I would say, even though I actually came into the book, I feel like with some spoilers or, you know, having an idea of the general arc, you will just, one little last selling piece if you need it is you will have a good time with Bilbo Baggins. There will be moments where he's putting his hands on his hips and, throws in some Bilbo-esque line where you're just, you can crack a smile and have a good time. So if you haven't read The Hobbit and you're craving something like a Discworld novel, this should be the one to pick up. Not to, Discworld or anything, but if you're looking for that sort of just a little breather, palate cleanser, fun time, it can totally serve that purpose for you at the very least. So
I would agree with that. Yeah,
David, thank you very much. Great pitch, and that was our number. See you, David. Thank you very much. That was our number three. We're in the top two time.
All righty.
Top two time.
I will say this list has earned a lot of my goodwill back with adding The Hobbit here.
Okay.
So high, so I appreciate that.
The top two is going to seal the deal for you. The viewers chose correctly with their top several here.
Okay.
Number two, we have Gecko here to pitch the one, the only, Piranesi. Hey, Gecko.
Hello.
Do you want to pitch?
Merch, so.
Oh my God. You know what? Suddenly, David and Salty just lost a lot of credibility with their pitches. What's going on? Gecko, pitch this wonderful book.
Okay. So, Piranesi by Susanna Clarke, the second Susanna Clarke book on this list.
Yes.
Because she's a great author. Isn't so much a book as it is an experience. You don't read this book, you fall into it.
Mm-hmm.
And it just takes you on a journey. And this book is very philosophical. It's very well written. Susanna Clarke has amazing prose, as has already been said. And it's just lovely. But everyone who reads it gets something different out of it, which is why it's the perfect book to discuss. Now, I read this book because of you two. So,
well, were you there for the book club that we did, or was it afterwards?
No,
yeah,
I came afterwards, but I was watching your video, and I was like, I need to read this book.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well.
If
we did one thing right.
Yeah,
we got a few people to read Piranesi.
Yes.
Yeah. This is the sort of book that if you like Albert Camus' The Fall, that's F-A-L-L, not F-O-O-L.
Okay.
You will really like this because it does similar things in a completely different way. Now, Camus is talking about a philosophical absurdism. Of course, this is nothing like that, but it's the same sort of, you read it and you discuss it and you get so much out of it. So I think it will really, really appeal to people that will, like, that love, like, philosophy and, like, really philosophical takes mm-hmm. on books. And now you might want to think, why am I not telling you anything about what happens?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to. You just need to experience it. Just go in blind and just read the book and talk about it. And you know, have a meeting with your friends and get them all to read it. And then you all discuss it. And you, when you talk about it, you get more out of it.
It's see like how Gecko doesn't spoil things? See how it's done?
Fine. Gecko's better at not spoiling things than me. Whoop-de-doo.
But
everyone's better.
particularly this book, though, Gecko's right where it is one of those that you just, you know what I mean? Because you have to pitch a book to go, what's the hook? You know, what's the hook into this? Like, what's the setup? Gecko, you're right to say that even getting the hook, we usually read the first line, the title of the first line, just to give you the feel of it. Do you even want to give people that, or do you just want them to go even blind, not even first sentence type thing? What do you feel? It's your pitch. So what do you think? Is it best to go completely blind or read that?
The first line, like the
title
the
of that.
The title of the chapter, basically, like the title entry.
Yeah.
I think gives a vibe.
Gecko, what do you think?
What do you think? Yeah. Up to you.
Yes, I will read it out. When the moon rose in the third northern hall, I went to the ninth festival.
That's it.
That's it.
That's it. That's it.
You mind adding there the year?
Oh, yes. The year.
That was the line that kind of like threw me. I'm like, oh, I got it. I gotta know.
Entry for the first day of the fifth month in the year the Albatross came to the southwestern halls.
All right, now can you go to the third and fourth?
Just read off the book.
Just read the book.
No, but I got to say, one of the unique aspects of this book that I don't think I've experienced in really the same way from another book is during our book club discussion, almost every single person in the book club took the book a different way.
Yes.
Basically, everyone had a drastically different interpretation of what actually happens and what the message is. And there were so many different ideas represented that, like, I was flabbergasted that all of these different messages, and when they were being explained to us, I was like, oh, yeah, you're totally right. That's totally there. And I didn't even see it.
Mm-hmm.
That is the amazing aspect of discussing this book with people. So highly recommend if you're going to read this, of course, you can read it by yourself. But highly recommend grabbing a couple friends to read this, especially because it is so short. It's not a big ask to get people to read.
There's
also classes. If you're a teacher at a school and you want a great discussion book for your your class, this is it.
Yep.
Pyrenees. I have it on my
shelf. Oh, there it is. Yes.
There we go. Get this book, teachers. You want to
also
get
the Folio of Societies. Come on,
if you want kids to actually enjoy a fantasy novel and like discuss something fun, get this. Way better. So,
what age group would you say?
Point. I don't think you don't have to be that old, but
Gecko, would you put this for who would you recommend this for? Is this adults only? Not as far as content really goes, but just the comprehension level.
I'd say high school.
High school? That's fair.
Probably, yeah. Maybe for comprehension. I definitely think like ninth grade is certainly an acceptable grade. For Americans. Sorry.
How does that translate? Yes.
How does that translate to...
How old are you in ninth grade?
You are 14, right? 13? Oh, do I have that wrong? Yeah, I think you're 13 or 14. Early teens.
It's 17.
Yes, you're sort of year 9 for us. Yeah. Year 10, year 9?
Year 10, year 9, yes.
So 13, 14 years old, probably an acceptable time to understand at least enough of the book to enjoy it.
But Gecko, when you finished this, did you discuss it with anybody you knew and that's what made it even better?
No, well, I think I'm the only person that I know personally that's read it, but then I got my mom to read it, so we were having a discussion about it.
Yes, so. I thought I remember that. So your mom had an interpret, which don't say these interpretations, but she had a different interpretation than you did. That just made it like, oh my.
Yeah.
Yeah. That it's such a cool experience to have. Gecko, any last words for getting people to read this book and just telling them that you must do this? Because it was our number two, by the way, 39 votes. Hobbit got 17. This got 39. It was a huge jump from 3 to 2. Anything else you want to say, Gecko, to these people and implore them to read this book?
It's under 300 pages.
That's it.
That's good pitch.
That's a great. Hey, a lot of these other books are chonkers, so.
Mr. Norrell, which was on the list, is 1,000 pages. Where was that on the list?
That was an honorable. No, that was number 10.
It was number 10. So, man, Susanna Clarke, all the way at the bottom of the list, but all the way at the top. Man, what a great.
Gecko, what an awesome author. Thank you very much for the pitch. Awesome pitch.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
That was, and Gecko also mentioned, that was Susanna Clarke's second entry into the top 10. So we had two Susanna Clarkes. We had two Sandersons, because remember, we had Warbreaker and we had Yumi.
Yep.
Alastair was only honorable mention, so it wasn't. And then we had two of Joe Abercrombie's with Best Served Cold and The Heroes. And those were our three two-peats, where they were mentioned twice. Our number one book on the list is a one-peat. Is it one of one? It is the best fantasy standalone of all time. Our viewers did it correctly. It's The Sword of Kaigan by M.L. Wang. This is arguably my favorite book of all time. Arguably. And I say arguably because I love all my children. So this is M.L. Wang's masterpiece. This will be told throughout time. I'm convinced this will be a representative of when they look back to fantasy in the 2020s or what came out, or late 2010s, or whenever this came out. Was it 2019? Something like that. Uh-huh. But this will be what people look back to. This is The Sword of Kaigan. We had a pitch submitted from Andy from Patreon. Hey, Andy. Andy was, just a little backstory, Andy was one of our earliest patron members ever. He's been here for 2.5 years, which I can't believe, two and a quarter, something like that. And I can't believe that we've existed that long, which is just wild to think about.
That is wild to think about. I will, to give a little insight, because I think it is funny. On our Patreon, we have a kind of individual chat groups based on how long someone's been in the Patreon. Mm-hmm. So, like, there's a new members chat, a been there at least 3 months chat, then a 6 month, 1 year, 2 years. We have the elusive, no one's in there, 3 year chat is there.
We haven't had a Patreon for 3 years yet.
But when we first implemented it, I found it so funny if we have the 2 year member chats and they get added to it. And it's just like, it's just Andy.
Now there's several. There's Orkish, yeah. Mads, Curtis.
Now a couple are in there.
Now there's several because
they can actually chat there. But it was so funny seeing him. It was like, is it just me?
Jangle's in there too. But yeah. Early on, there's like nobody.
I just remember that and thought it was really funny. It was a
hello, nobody.
Hello to nobody.
that is, Andy submitted this pitch, and Andy was gone for 2 years and then he went on a religious trip and then came back. And so he was with our channel, I think, when we had 4,000 or 5,000 subscribers, something like that. And came back.
I think much earlier than that. I think we only have a couple hundred subscribers or like 1,000.
It was early. I think it was early.
May have been sub 1,000.
I just know we made the Patreon after we hit 4,000, something like that.
Oh, okay.
But understood. He could have viewed us before that. I'm not sure, but this is one of our OGs. A huge thanks to Andy, because honestly, if we didn't get we're doing this because we're passionate about it and we love doing this stuff. If we didn't get some sort of traction, you know, first 6 months in, first 7 months and doing nothing, we post these videos for a reason, building community, talking to people. So even these early viewers were a huge part of giving us the confidence going, okay, people are enjoying this.
Yeah.
We'll keep doing it. So emphasizing over 2 year member. So Andy, thank you so much. This is video he submitted on The Sword of Kaigan. And I love that he has the correct opinion.
He does. There's a reason why he's here.
Yes, soldier. All right, let's see his pitch. It just doesn't work.
The Sword of Kaigan by M.L. Wang is a super awesome book, super masterful. And it takes place in the world of Duna in the Kaiganese Empire in a town that feels like feudal era Japan. This book is very character driven, and they will leave you cheering and then crying. It's awesome, crazy mix of emotions. The two main characters are young boy Mamoru and his mother Misaki, with the important addition of the father and husband Takeru Matsuda. The Matsuda family has a legacy of being matchless warriors and having great magical prowess, with a hidden technique called the Whispering Blade. This story focuses on the Matsuda family and their internal struggles, as well as their difficulties with the government. This is a beautiful story, super wonderful, about the love of a mother, the importance of family and community. The Sword of Kaigen has stupendous fight scenes and a superlative magic system. It has elemental magic like Avatar The Last Airbender, but on steroids. It's better. Mm-hmm. It's great. Mm-hmm. If you want a book with amazing fights, magic, swords, compelling deep characters, and maybe a good cry, a few tears, you know, The Sword of Kaigen is the book for you. In the end, all I have to say is, book good.
Yes!
Yeah, Andy, book good.
Book damn good. Even him describing why it's so amazing reminds me of just why this is a masterpiece. Oh, it's so good. Everything. Yeah, because you get emotions, action. So, I don't want to give away. Just the general feels that you get from this book is next to none.
The main thing I to give nothing away other than just expectations and what I really got out of this novel.
Right. How did it end?
Yeah. I'll give you the details of exactly how it ended. No, but a big aspect of this book is I thought I was reading a story that I have seen before. Mm-hmm. And I read it going like, oh, I've seen stories like this. And I was reading it and enjoying it for what I thought it was. And then the book clearly was telling a different kind of story.
Yep.
That I have not seen better represented, better exemplified out of anything else I've read. For this message and theme, I've not seen it better done. I love this.
No,
novel.
I'd argue it can't be better done. I mean, obviously there's no books perfect, because if you have this idea of perfect, there's always this one tiny complaint which brings the book from a 7-star to like a 6-star, so it still breaks the rating system in a way. It's just that amazing, because to get people into chapter one of this, just the first quirky thing that you notice, this is page one, just to show you that this different vibe that it gives you. You're reading this book where you have a Japanese warrior on the cover, just a very Asian inspired, and you're seeing this samurai sword and this whispering blade, and very fantasy-esque, and you read the first page about this Matsuda family, and you're reading all, and all of a sudden you notice a PS4, not a PS4, just a Game Boy.
Yeah.
It shows up on the page. Wait, what? A Game Boy? And I thought I was in fantasy and swords and magic and
ancient
avatars.
Japan or something.
What the heck's going on? And just I was like, whoa, what's going on here? And that's all it needed to get me going, okay, this is not what you expect it is. And obviously that's just a very small thing in the beginning. The book then explores, it is the best character deep dive you can get into, plot twist galore. When we talk about our rating system, it's just everything 5 stars. Maybe prose is like a 4, less than 5, but everything floored. Basically perfection. This book, if you have not read, I think because we're pulling our audience,
I will say there is another category which I don't think is floored.
Which one? World building for you?
Yes.
It is for me. It is for me. So, you're not going to get Middle Earth world building.
I will have my complaints of like, I don't think I was floored with the world building, but it is still incredibly well done for the aspects that it covers. It's incredibly well done. So
yeah, but regardless, it's a fantasy must read. And I know we're pulling our audience with this, so I don't know how much of that is overlap of how much we have shilled for this book and then reading it, just like Gecko had read Pure Nessie, because we push Pure Nessie. It's that's our motto. So the top two books are two of our favorite standalones, so our audience got those right without a doubt.
Fair enough.
That is, I'm so happy to see that as number one. That got 45 votes out of our 350 or so, which means anybody had the right to type in whatever fantasy standalone out of the quintillion that exists, however many exist, and that means roughly 8% of respondents said Sword of Kaigen. That is how many people, when they thought fantasy standalone, 8% on just a blanket, not multiple choice, just name a book. That's pretty impressive. There'll be almost 1 out of 10 people say that. So that's
pretty damn impressive.
And add us onto the vote, it gets it closer to 10% because we both also...
add our votes in there too, because if I had to pick, there we go.
Yes.
Overall, though, that the final book, you have any hidden...
Did you want to hear some of the ones that didn't get honorable mentions that were below?
I do want to hear it a little bit.
Here was a couple. These are ones that got five votes below the honorable mentions. The Song of Achilles, The Invisible Life of Addie LaRue, Between Two Fires. Now, the next category, these are ones that got four votes. There's only one. Small Gods.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing. And then the ones below that, with three votes, was Project Hail Mary, which is a sci-fi. So they didn't read that it was a fantasy standalone. We have Circe. I'm saying that so wrong. C-I-R.
Is it Circe?
Circe, it might be. Then Tress of the Emerald Sea, A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, The Last Unicorn, and Good Omens. And you could argue, are those Discworld books standalones? I would say a lot of them are.
Plenty of good books
in there. I do have some beef with some people. Those were some of the top ones, because then we get into the two votes and the one votes. We had someone submit... This person struck a nerve. You know who you are out there. This person read the document, which says submit your favorite fantasy standalone of all time. They submitted. They asked. I'm so sorry, whoever this is. I'm actually not. They said, can I combine Kingdoms of Death and Ashes of Man as one? Because it feels like one book, and they submit that. So one, they submitted a sci-fi. Two, they submitted a series, and three, they did two books into one. They just said, F you, Austin, I'm not reading the instructions, and I kind of respected it. But I was stunned. That didn't hit any qualification. It was not fantasy, not standalone, and not even one book. Anyways, I thought that was funny that somebody did that.
That is great.
They read it and said, no, this is my list. Sun Eater's that good, I'm throwing it.
It belongs on any list, anywhere.
Then we had a bunch of other votes from, again, we had 95 different books, 94 that were submitted out of the infinitesimal standalones, fantasy standalones there are.
Yeah, fair enough. Man, so, this was a great list.
Yes. Overall, you'd make adjustments, but does it get the Ramble approval for you?
It is not the Richard Rambler list.
That's correct.
But I think it does get the Rambler approval of this is a good list. Good list of standalones to read. Some of the, especially some of the top ones, some of the best there is. Yeah. So you can't go wrong with really anything on this list other than the handful that I haven't read yet, so I can't form a good opinion on.
Yes.
So, well, I don't know.
We have lots to read on the list. I imagine we'll agree more after we read Susanna Clarke's other book, Jonathan Strange, and others of the sort.
The spear that...
Spear that cuts through water. Yeah.
Yeah. And Babel, things like that, so...
So a big thank you to all the patrons that participated and helped pitch books. Join our Patreon, link in the description below if you want to join our book club. Other than that, also, we had an ad in this episode about Displate. So go use our code TUTORAMBLE at checkout. Remember to go check out Displate and all that goody stuff. Support the channel. But otherwise, happy reading. That's a great fantasy standalone list. Let us know if you like these kind of videos. And well, maybe we should make one of our own once we've read more of these standalones.
Fair enough. Yeah. All right. Bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.